Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have an amazing guest, you know, a guest that has done it multiple times. You know, he has some exits too, which is amazing. And we're going to be talking about fundraising in emerging markets versus, let's say, what you could be experiencing fundraising, let's say, in the US or in other places that are similar. Also thinking about regional operations, going regional, scaling teams and also scaling the operations in parallel, as well as, you know, what happens, you know, when you go through that full cycle of building, you know, scaling, financing, and also reaching the finish line with a company that you founded from the ground up. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Federico Malek. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Alejandro. It's a pleasure to be here.
So originally born and raised in Argentina, give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up?
Oh, it was great. It was great. Argentina, I always say the same. I think that I'm in love with my hometown, Buenos Aires. I think it's one of the best cities in the world. Super eclectic. It's great to do, you know, the type of business that we do. And you know, there are a lot of tech startups here. There's a lot of talent. So Buenos Aires was great. I love soccer. I love beef. So it's kind of like the perfect city for me.
So in your case, how did you get into the world of entrepreneurship and business? I mean, I know that you studied economics, but this whole venture world, how did it come knocking to you?
So yes, I'm in my 30s right now, mid-30s. So when I was in college, in probably early 2000s, here in Argentina, we had this amazing success stories for kind of like the first wave of entrepreneurs, of web and internet entrepreneurs with, you know, they were making great companies like Mercado Libre, like Terremate, you know, all the first very successful, let's say, wave of companies. And I was really inspired by them when I was studying in college, when I was in school, in high school. And I probably knew from the early beginnings that I just wanted to go there. I just wanted to be, you know, this kind of, you know, guys, you know, raising money from international and global investors, you know, funding companies and doing companies that were really with very inspiring, let's say, purposes and missions that were really trying to change the way we do certain things in Latam. So I guess that from the early beginnings, I knew I just wanted to go there. It was just a matter of time. So when I had the chance, I, you know, after college, I started doing investment banking, M&A, probably one of the most typical, let's say, outcomes for a graduate. And after that, I just, you know, after 2 years and a half, I just thought, hey, this is my time. I need to try it. I need to risk and to take some risk. And I just, you know, took the shot.
So let's talk about that, because I mean, it was, you know, kind of like a similar model to Groupon. And we're talking about, you know, I mean, the company went public, you know, Groupon, you know, back then. But I guess Groupon ended up acquiring you guys, and then you kind of like started developing or doing the expansion, you know, across Latin America. So how is that journey like?
It was an amazing journey. So the first company, we were really lucky because when we were like 24 years old, we started learning about this. When we started kind of like analyzing what type of companies we wanted to do, we understood that e-commerce was an amazing opportunity for Latin America. And we learned about this new, you know, project that was really doing very well in the US back then, Groupon. And we started analyzing and we thought, you know, we reached the conclusion that for LATAM, for different reasons, this model was going to be very successful. And indeed, after, you know, a couple of years after that, the penetration that we had with Groupon in the region was higher than in certain, you know, European countries. So we had like an amazing success with the Groupon model in LATAM. But, you know, back then we knew it was going to be successful. And we started a Groupon clone, you know, a Groupon kind of model, a hard discount company called Walus that was offering hard discounts in different local services in Buenos Aires. And, you know, 1 year after we started, we got approached by one of the by the Groupon team that they wanted to go international. So we started talking and we ended up selling, you know, our company, our startup to them.
So what was it like to go through an acquisition process? Because this was, you know, the first time around, and I'm sure it was frightening, it was exciting, but how was that like?
It was very exciting because we knew that this was, of course, changing our, let's say, this was going to, you know, take us to a totally different level, you know. And 6 months after the acquisition, we went from a team of 16 people to almost 180. So we knew that, you know, this was really going to change our company for the better. You know, we were young. We were kind of like eager to take the experience, and we didn't think it. You know, we didn't thought about it like a frightening experience. When we had the chance to do it, we just took it. I mean, it was like it was obvious for us that we should, you know, go over that, let's say, path. And let's say the only problem that we had back then is like, hey, we are a startup, we're doing well. Maybe this is like an early exit for us, and maybe we shouldn't take it. But the way that we structure it, you know, with earnouts, made us possible to capture the future growth that the company had. So it was overall, I think it was a good deal, a very good deal for us, and a much better experience.
So in the end, you know, you guys ended up starting an e-commerce company, you know, right after the whole, you know, seeing the company going public and, you know, all of that good stuff. You ended up venturing, you know, and going at it again. So tell us about what happened with Avenida. How did you guys come up with the concept and the yeah. idea of going at it with it?
So after we saw the kind of like the penetration that Groupon had in LATAM, especially in countries like Argentina and Chile, Colombia, the model really was really successful in these countries. And, you know, there was kind of like, it was obvious for us that a more pure play player of e-commerce, multi-category, more alike, more similar to Amazon, was going to be really successful in Argentina as well. So we started with that idea. So in Argentina back then, we had Groupon, we had Mercado Libre, that back in that moment in 2013, 2014, it was a model that was very similar to eBay. And we thought, hey, there's a big room here to create an Amazon business model. Let's say a pure play e-commerce with own fulfillment, doing marketplace for other players, selling one party stock and inventory as well, with a great customer service, with a great customer experience. So we started, you know, we started the company in 2014. We raised, you know, $50 million from three subsequent rounds from global VCs like Tiger Global by Naspers. And probably what we didn't realize back then is that, you know, doing business in emerging markets is so, and raising money for emerging markets is a little bit different than in the US. We you know, the business model of a pure play e-commerce, it's extremely, let's say, relies, you know, a lot on capital. And the problem of emerging markets is that, especially in Argentina, is that the macro and the political fluctuations are very extreme, as you can see right now from what's going on right now. But so, in one of these downturns, it became really difficult to continue, you know, raising money for the original model. And back then, we realized that we had a very good tech to sell it as a software as a service for other players because our platform was really good. And so we kind of like pivoted. We sold the business. We pivoted it to more of a, let's say, a software as a service platform for non-e-commerce players that wanted to be or become a marketplace like banks, like other retailers. And those type of players. So that is what we realized back then. You know, if you are thinking about a business that relies on capital to grow, you know, you really need to think about what's your target market, right? Because emerging markets, the problem that you have is that, you know, these fluctuations make it really difficult to kind of like continue this type of business for the long run.
So then obviously with Avenida, you know, there was quite a bit of lessons learned. I guess, which one was the top one that you took away with you from the Avenida experience?
It's what we said. I mean, top one is so everyone is talking about probably kind of like, you know, becoming profitable right now and, you know, having profitable growth. And probably for a lot of companies and a lot of startups, this high growth, high burn model, it's not working anymore. What we realized back then in 2015, 2016, is that the high growth, high burn model was not suitable for LATAM, because you cannot rely on having, let's say, a very mature capital markets that could, and you know, you don't have a lot of investors that are willing to invest like big amounts of money in LATAM to sustain a high growth, high burn model. You know, that's the main lesson that we learned. If you want to do a startup in emerging markets, you better figure out how to become sustainable from the early beginnings and have strong unit economics. And probably instead of starting a high burn, high growth business model, you should become really aware on how to make a sustainable business from the early beginnings. Because probably, and this is everybody that is doing, you know, business in emerging markets face it in some way, you know, in 1 year, the markets where you are operating might, you know, be really hot for some investors. And, you know, in 18 months, the situation can change dramatically. And you can find yourself in a very tough situation to raise money, although the company might be doing well and might be doing great. So that is very important. You know, if you're starting a business here, you need to figure out how to become sustainable from day one. If you like to do, like, let's say, a high growth, high burn type of business, you probably should go to a more mature market like Europe, like some places in Asia, or in, of course, the US, but not in LATAM, not in kind of like mid emerging markets.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I gotta tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So then it's quite a shift, going from e-commerce to insurtech. So yeah. Different segments. So what triggered that?
I always feel very curious about doing stuff outside of e-commerce. I wanted an experience there. So Unigo was the first, let's say, end-to-end insurtech of LATAM. You know, we had some, let's say, websites like comparisons, you know, but we are an authentic end-to-end insurance company. When I was, you know, our, you know, main shareholder was one of the largest insurance companies of the region. So when I got approached by them, you know, I guess I needed an experience where after Avenida, I needed an experience of like, okay, let's try to do something different. Let's try to do something within like a large institution and, you know, just keep it, let's say, calm for a couple of years. And so I started this, you know, it was a great experience. I really enjoyed it because it was really different. It was much more, let's say, tech than doing e-commerce, because we had to do software for underwriting, for fraud prevention, for issuing of, you know, policies. We had to create an entire interface and digital interface to interact with, you know, with our digital customer that was acquiring our products. So it was a great experience. After, you know, some years, I wanted to go back and, you know, start my own business again. And that's what we did. And we wanted, but, you know, with all the experience that we had before with, my founding colleagues and, you know, my partners, we wanted to go back to e-commerce because the e-commerce opportunity is huge in LATAM. LATAM is the fastest growing e-commerce market in the world, especially Mexico. It has a lot of room to continue expanding, but we wanted, as I said before, you know, we had a lot of experience and we started like kind of like creating some dogmas. Like, so dogma number one is like, we're not going to make a company that loses money. I mean, we are going to start a company that is sustainable and profitable from day one. Number two, we don't want a company that relies exclusively on customer acquisition. Customer acquisition is like insanely high for Latin America as it is in other countries and other parts of the world, but we want to do e-commerce. So we decided that the way to kind of like, when you mix all this, we saw an amazing opportunity on creating digital brands, you know, for the digital buyer, for the digital consumer. So that's what we're doing right now in Wonder Brands that we started in 2021.
So let's talk about the business model then of Wonder Brands. How do you guys make money?
We create consumer discretionary brands for the rising middle class of Latin America. So we are serving a huge market of 400 million people by serving them and providing them consumer brands in discretionary categories such as home and garden, pet accessories, baby accessories, tools, and all, you know, do-it-yourself essentials, mattresses, and sleep products. We have more than 16 brands, over 3,000 products that we sell on online marketplaces and our own D2C channels as well. We are right now one of the top 10 marketplace operators in Latin America.
So how is it going to the whole approach, for example, of, because I know that you guys have raised 35 million here. What has been the experience of raising that money? And then also, what is it like to raise money, you know, in the US versus, let's say, raising money in a place like Latin America?
It's very different. So we have a tech backbone that help us develop these brands. And, you know, it's, I mean, probably the success that we had, because a lot of the brands that we have right now in our portfolio have become really champions in their categories. So for instance, we have the number one selling mattress brand of online channels in Mexico. We are selling more mattresses than anyone else. Our luggage brand that is called Rumbo, it's the number three luggage brand from Amazon in Mexico as well. So we have a lot of success stories. We were able to really penetrate in some categories with our brands. And I think that the main reason is that because we are doing it very different. We are developing brands as you develop software. Starting with MVPs. And from an MVP, we iterate the products and we get to kind of like the winner product very fast. And once we get that, we start investing heavily on that product. But once we know that it's going to be a successful product. So it's a very lean approach that we learn from, you know, almost 10 years doing software. And we took it to the real world. And that's kind of like our secret sauce. That's our main differentiator. And, you know, raising money for this model, raising money in emerging markets, raising money in Latin America, it's very hard. All right. It's very difficult. We had, I think we had like a like a golden age in from 2016 to 2021, 2022, with all this money coming from SoftBank and a lot of other, you know, funds that were really active in the region. I think that some of them are still active, but the options that you have to raise money in Latin America are much more reduced than in the US. And when in a moment of like low interest rates, a lot of investors go to this type of emerging markets to seek, you know, for growth alternatives. When, you know, interest rates go up, there's a flight to quality, and these regions tend to dry up. So it becomes more challenging. I think that great companies are always going to get funded somehow, regardless of the region, but it's the options that you have in LATAM are a little bit more reduced. So you need probably, I have a lot of friends that are raising money and have raised money in the US, and we are kind of like aware of the process there. So a typical process that in the US might take, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks to get a term sheet and, you know, probably close a deal in, you know, like probably a month and a half, 2 months, probably takes 4 months here in LATAM. You need to see a lot of other investors. Investors are a little bit more cautious about investing in LATAM. They probably start doing like a very tough due diligence. You need to be prepared for that. You need to be aware that the processes here in LATAM are, they take more time. They are more difficult. They end up being like very different from the original plan that you designed. So the companies need to be prepared for that. In the US, I've seen companies, you know, running out of cash doing it, you know, just knowing that they can raise money because the capital markets are much more mature. It doesn't happen here in LATAM. So you need to be more careful when you plan ahead.
So when planning ahead, you know, and thinking about the vision here, obviously that's what the investors are really betting on. So if you were to go to sleep tonight, Fede, and you wake up in a world where the vision of Wonder Brands is fully realized, what does that world look like?
It's probably a very similar world than the one that we have right now. I think that LATAM has made a lot of progress, and some of the Latin American e-commerce markets have become really big, right? So we just need time to realize our mission. We are right now on $100 million run rate in terms of net revenues, and we know, and we still didn't launch Brazil. And with Brazil, we can triple, you know, the size of our company on a very short term, and we know that in a very short term, let's say in less than 3 years, we can be doing $500 million in sales. So that's a big company, even for the US, right? So it's just a matter of time of continue deploying and continue taking our brands to the rest of the Latin American countries. So it's a matter of time. I mean, the market is already there. It's already big to create huge companies like the one that we are creating right now at Wonder Brands.
So let's talk about the past here, because now, you know, you've built several companies. So if I had to give you the opportunity where, let's say you're coming out, you know, of now being a graduate, you know, there at the Universidad de San Andrés, and you are now thinking about, you know, maybe like a world of your own, a world where, you know, maybe you can bring a solution to a problem that you're encountering. Let's say you had the opportunity of having a chat with your younger self, you know, maybe even that younger self that was coming out of giving the notice at the investment bank where you were at, you know, initially. And you were able to give one piece of advice to that younger self, that younger Fede, before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
Well, probably, you know, one of the best advices that I would give to any entrepreneur coming out from Argentina or any other emerging market is that you need to choose very wisely the country where you're going to start your business. Because we tend to have, let's say, we tend to, you know, start our business in our hometowns and in our home countries. And that's because we think that it's going to be easier to start there than in any other country or in any other market in the world, you know. And yeah, because I'm from Buenos Aires or I'm from Spain or whatever, probably it's easier for me to start my business there. But, you know, starting starting your own business, you know this, Alejandro, it takes a lot of effort. And it's a very hard path. It's a very hard business to start a company. And, you know, just don't be attached to your home country. Don't be attached to a country where you were kind of like born, because that probably not be the best option for you, you know? Like, so probably I would have started a startup or a company in other parts of the world when I was younger. I mean, younger people tend to be a little bit, have a lot of more liberty to travel around and, you know, move to another countries, move to another regions. I would probably, you know, recommend that to my younger self. Just, you know, if you want to start a business, choose wisely where you want to do it, because it's going to be hard anyway. It's going to be hard here in the US, in Europe, or in India, or whatever. But if you choose your market wisely, you won't have to fight, or let's say, you won't have the obstacle of the wrong market for your business. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's the same. I mean, it's as hard, you know, probably doing a business in India, an e-commerce, you know, e-business in India, it's as hard as probably doing it in Mexico. But India is 10 times bigger, you know? So that's it. So probably, you know, when you're in your 30s, in your 40s, you know, moving to India, it's a little bit more difficult. But when you're starting out, you know, like, probably that's an adventure, you know?
100%. Fede, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Probably LinkedIn, Twitter, you can find me there. And happy to answer any questions or, you know, engage into any conversation.
Amazing. Well, Fede, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Alejandro, and hope to see you soon.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.